Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Pennsylvania's county governments are on the front lines of providing services to their citizens. The state and federal governments may get more attention, but it is the counties that provide human services and other responsibilities that often have a daily impact on you. But county governments are limited in how they can generate revenue and in other ways. Every year, Pennsylvania's counties establish a list of priorities, and that's what we'll discuss today. Joining us on today's program is Lisa Schaefer, Executive Director of the County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania. Lisa Schaefer, good to see you again.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Also joining us is Bradford County Commissioner and CCAP Second Vice President Daryl Miller. Commissioner, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And joining us on the phone is Butler County Commissioner and CCAP First Vice President Kevin Boozle. Commissioner, welcome to Smart Talk.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Lisa Schaefer, before we get into the priorities for 2020, what don't Pennsylvanians know or generally know about Pennsylvania counties?
So Pennsylvania's counties really touch the lives of every Pennsylvanian every day in a lot of different ways. You already alluded to the human services programs that we provide. So that's everything from providing mental health services locally, drug and alcohol and substance abuse services, long-term care, investigating children and youth abuse, for example. But everything that we do goes so far beyond just those items. We run the local court system. We do the county jails, we completely administer that. The 911 system is a county responsibility. So when you call 911, you are calling a county office. The elections that we've been talking about so much, everything that we do at the county level is to administer that election system from voter registration all the way through the results at the end of the day. We do the assessment system, so all the property assessment and then valuation that goes into your property tax system.
And there are many Pennsylvanians that thank you for that.
I know they do.
I'm being a little bit sarcastic.
Most people are.
But why don't Pennsylvanians know about these things?
You know, there's a lot of those things that kind of go on the background. Unless you actually have to come to the courthouse, say, for your marriage license or to come in for a court date, you don't realize that you might be driving over a county bridge or that you might be, you know, that stormwater pond over there might be because of county planning and the stormwater management that we do. You know, you see things like the schools, you see your roads, your potholes, things like that are very visible but aren't county government. We do a lot of those things that are invisible but still so impactful to everybody's lives every day.
I'm sure you still do get calls about those potholes, though, don't you?
We certainly do.
Just an observation in, you know, the 40 years that I've worked in broadcast news, an observation is that the people in rural counties tend to be closer to their county governments than in some of the more populated counties. Do you agree with that?
I think, it really depends on whether you have to access those services that counties provide, whether you're in a rural, suburban, urban county, and then whether you know that service is being provided by the county.
Well, the reason I made that observation is that in some of the smaller counties, more rural counties I've worked, the county commissioners were like the stars of the county. I mean, they were the celebrities. Commissioner Miller, are you a celebrity in Bradford County?
I don't know as I characterize myself as a celebrity, no. But there are a lot of things we do on a daily basis that touch a lot of people's lives that they really don't think about.
Well, the reason I say that is because, I'm doing it in a humorous way talking about a celebrity, but yeah. It seems as though in rural counties that the residents of those counties have a closer relationship with their counties, that they see you, you're more visible on a day-to-day basis than in some of the more populated counties where, you know, there may be other government offices or other high-profile people that are in those counties.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we're in the communities, we're out, you know, reaching out to people, talking to people in different settings on a day-to-day basis. So obviously in a smaller, more rural county, we're very visible and, you know, people know who we are.
Mm-hmm. Every year, the County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania makes a list of legislative priorities. Now, these are not issues that counties tackle themselves. I'm sure each county has set their own list of priorities or goals for things that they want to do during a given year. But this list is meant for the legislature. Lisa Schaefer, how would you describe what your legislative priorities are meant to do?
A lot of our legislative priorities are really about working together in partnership with the state government. So both the legislature and the administration, how can we provide these local services on behalf, often because of state mandates, federal mandates. So we really need that partnership so that when changes are being made to programs, it might impact how we can deliver those services on the ground, or when there are funding structures that impact our ability to be able to make sure there's enough capacity for those programs that we're being asked to provide. Those are the things that we really need to make sure that, that across the board, whatever the subject matter is that we're touching, that we're working together to fulfill those missions.
Is it too simple to say that your legislative priorities, that your biggest priority is to find funding for sometimes mandated things that are mandated from the state, things that sometimes aren't mandated from the state?
Funding is often a big part of our priorities, correct, but there's also other things that we talk about in terms of regulatory burdens, in terms of programmatic requirements and paperwork requirements, administrative burdens, and all sorts of requirements that go into the way that we deliver programs.
Commissioner Boozle, give me an example of a regulatory reform or something from the state that you'd like to see reformed.
Well, I think that the idea that we're working towards moving people out of our jail for having mental illness, or putting people back out that are nonviolent back into the society with support services, those are all great initiatives. However, when we get there, we still owe it to our public to make sure that we have the security systems in place and the programming that is there. So oftentimes the idea is there, but sometimes the funding doesn't follow until we explain to them what each impact of every legislative body is doing to the next. And so when they make these legislative actions, we have the ripple effect on the county and the municipal end, the local townships and boroughs, and we oftentimes speak on behalf of all residents.
When you say we have to explain to them, you mean a legislator or legislators. Why wouldn't they know that? Why wouldn't they, as they're passing legislation, know that there's not money attached to it, that it is an unfunded mandate?
Well, again, as we just spoke earlier, how many people really know how many things the county's county commissioners do? That would include your legislative body sometimes. Many of them have not been county commissioners or even in the boroughs or townships. So when they make a legislative decision, they may be looking at funding. They may be looking at a pot of money and saying, wow, this is a lot of money. We could do this better if we just did this. Oftentimes, that doesn't equate to, in our world, to saving money. What it oftentimes will do is exasperate a problem. And so we as county commissioners, and I give Lisa and CCAP a ton of credit, this is why I got involved with CCAP, is because they are our voice in explaining our current role and what their actions will mean to us.
So you're saying there are legislators who don't know what counties do?
I would say not specifically. I would say that our budgets are primarily comprised of the state funding that we get and federal funding. They don't know how they interact or intermix. So, for an example, transportation. If we're looking at medical assistance transportation program, or you have the shared ride program, or there may be five different funding sources. If they move one of those, the other three or four may collapse. They don't know that. How would they know that? They're not intimately involved at that level.
Lisa, that's a real problem.
It can be a real challenge when it comes to advocating for some of these issues at the Capitol, certainly.
I mean, if you have to explain what a level of government does to legislators and the impact that what their actions have on county levels, I mean, because we're not talking about small amounts of money. We're talking about, you listed the services that counties provide. We're talking millions of dollars.
We are talking about millions of dollars that impact counties. And, you know, so we go in, you know, our team, along with our counties, do this back home with their local legislators. We try to build relationships as the start of every new session, go in and have these conversations and try to just say, you know, hey, if these issues come up, please understand counties are involved. Call us in. We want to see you at the table to have these conversations with you so that we can help you understand these impacts. I think the relationships that the associations built here in Harrisburg and the relationships that our members have built back in their own counties with their own delegations have been really helpful in moving us closer to that understanding than we might otherwise be.
I would hope that the majority of legislators know what's going on.
Except that I think they're aware of all the bills that are going on. It's just that we do so many different things that, you know, you might not realize that when, say, broadband comes up, that
right.
there might be a county angle to that, and that you might want to get a hold of your county commissioner and have a conversation with them about that.
My plan was to do this in order of your priorities, but since you just brought broadband up, you have a list of five priorities this year, and I'll list them here. Properly fund mental health services, finding solutions to emergency medical service, and you call it a crisis, diversifying the county tax base, expanding rural broadband, and funding adult probation services. And we can take those one by one. Number four on that list, Commissioner Miller, was broadband. Since Lisa just brought that up, let's kind of address that. This is an issue that I think everyone in Pennsylvania, or at least in the government of Pennsylvania, whether it's state level, maybe even the federal level, will say, yeah, we have to expand broadband. That I don't know what the latest percentage is, maybe you do know it, of Pennsylvanians that do not have access to broadband, and it has a real impact on economic development, education, agriculture, all those things. So everyone agrees it has to happen, but it hasn't happened because it costs money. What are you looking for?
Well, obviously, we're looking for help to find the funding to help expand broadband in counties, in especially rural counties. Because, again, the broadband issue touches a lot of things that people don't even think about. I mean, the simple things like your Ring doorbells, your, you know, all of your things that you know, interconnect in your house.
Ring doorbells, the video of the
right.
that are being
right.
very popular right now.
But it touches in really important ways in providing emergency services, because to have interconnectivity, it allows, like, radio communications to have, you know, other paths to communicate with, you know, the dispatchers, with other first responders, you know, showing up at a scene of an accident, a fire, or whatever the case may be. You've got to interconnect the towers for cell phone expansion, to expand cell phone coverage in rural counties. You need the fiber to interconnect those towers.
Mm-hmm. So in Bradford County, a rural county, is there broadband in any part of the county?
There is in the more populated areas of the county, yes.
Tawanda,
the Valley, Sarah, Athens area, yes. There's broadband accessibility. And in some rural areas there are, but it's extremely undercovered in most of our county.
Do you have school districts that don't have access to, or schools, I should say, maybe not districts, probably don't have a lot of districts, but...
We have seven school districts, but yes, we've got one in particular that basically doesn't have access to...
Do you know what percentage of the county doesn't have access to broadband?
I'm going to guess, but I'm going to tell you over half.
Okay. So, Commissioner Bozell, Butler County, close to Pittsburgh. Do you have any idea what percentage of people in Butler County don't have access to broadband?
Well, we are in a unique situation in our location. I would say that if they don't have hardwire, fiber wire to their house, they have access to oftentimes the dish-style networks because we're close to Pittsburgh and we have a better access area. However, we're still looking about, and I'm going to estimate this as well as Ed did, about 20% in the northeast quadrant of Butler County. It's a very rural area, very hilly terrain, and so it's a little more difficult to get there. And then you get into the situation of, okay, I might have access to it, but can I afford it? For those median incomes that go down in those rural areas, and then it becomes another issue.
Mm. So, Commissioner Merrill, let me turn back to you. What are you looking for? I mean, obviously, if this was something, I mean, as I said, everyone agrees that it's something that is needed in Pennsylvania, but it costs money. As Commissioner Bozell just mentioned, that sometimes it can't, that a lot of people look at it as, okay, this is just unaffordable. There are companies that would have to put the infrastructure in place to do it, says it's very expensive. So what are you looking for as a county?
Well, as a county, again, it does come down to funding, but again, what you alluded to, the fact that there are companies out there that obviously want to provide internet accessibility, broadband accessibility, But you have to have the infrastructure there. Now, Bradford County is kind of in a unique situation in that we're starting a project where we're funding from the county level at least the first segment of what will amount to a dark fiber loop system within the county to allow for other companies to hop onto those dark fibers, light them up, and provide internet accessibility in the more remote areas of our county. We're doing that because of the fact that we need more 911 radio towers in the county. We need the interconnectivity to connect those. So we're putting these loops in to facilitate that. But oh, by the way, while we're here, we're going to put a robust enough loop system in that other companies, your internet providers can light up their own fibers in this system and provide internet accessibility to the more remote areas of our county.
Do you see a solution? Lisa, I'll turn this to you. Do you see a solution or at least progress being made in this area?
I think there's at least a lot of impetuous to get moving. You know, there are a lot of ideas going on across the state. You just heard Commissioner Miller talk about what's going up in Bradford County. We know that there are some, you know, regional efforts going on in the center part of the state, the southwest part of the state. So we've got a lot of things going on that folks are trying to find, I think, local solutions. I think what we also need is to see, you know, how do we move forward together? How do we know who all the players are? And how do we bring those folks together so we can do something that's comprehensive for the entire state and not just kind of where folks might be able to get a regional local group together to provide a local solution?
Mm-hmm. This definitely sounds like something that needs partners. I mean, Governor Wolf has said this is a priority for his administration, is to get to expand broadband in rural areas in particular. But this would seem to be something that even the federal government would want to have done, not just in Pennsylvania, but across the country.
We need our state partners, our federal partners, our private provider partners. We need our even higher education, some of the work they're doing on studying the issue and some of the information they're providing. There's a lot of different individuals who can provide good support for moving forward on this.
We're going to talk about county's top priority coming up in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. You can check out some of the upcoming topics on Smart Talk over the next few weeks, including a study that was just recently released about polluted air in central Pennsylvania. And also, next week, we'll be talking about the state encouraging Pennsylvanians to vote and letting them know about some new ways to vote here in Pennsylvania. We invite you to share your questions in advance by sending us a voice memo or leaving voicemail. See what's coming up at WITF.org/smarttalk. On today's program, we're talking about the County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania's county's priorities, legislative priorities. There are five of them. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Our guest today, Butler County Commissioner and CCAP First Vice President Kevin Boozle, Bradford County Commissioner and CCAP Second Vice President Daryl Miller, and Lisa Schaefer, Executive Director of the County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania. Again, 1-800-729-7532. I kind of got out of order there with your top five legislative proposals, but this is a very important one. Not that they all aren't important, but right at the top of the list. Mental health services, what you're looking for is for the state to properly fund mental health services. First of all, Lisa, what kind of mental health services do counties provide?
Sure. So counties provide mental health services on behalf of the state. These are your community-based mental health services, things like residential programs, family supports, crisis intervention, outpatient care, and those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. So Commissioner Miller, why aren't they being properly funded?
I think if you go back a number of years ago, there were reductions made in some of the funding streams that have not been replenished through different succeeding state budgets. And that's one of the priorities that as a County Commissioners Association we've had, is to replenish those resources that were cut back a number of years ago. Because it's one of those things that the county is involved in providing these services, and yet they're asked to do it with reduced funding streams that then the local county property taxpayers have to make up the difference because it is a mandated service.
Are there people in Butler County, or excuse me, in Bradford County that are going without treatment because the funding isn't there?
No, thankfully, we don't have that issue in Bradford County. I mean, we've got a pretty good system in Bradford County where, you know, we've got a good group of people supporting the community that they're serving. So
no one's turned away?
No.
Mm-hmm. Butler County Commissioner Boozle, same way?
Same way. We've been able to institute our block grant to fill the gaps. There are gaps, but the block grant allows us some flexibility, which is extremely, extremely important in this type of level of service. Every community, every county is different. There's 67 counties in Pennsylvania, and every one of them, I guarantee you, handles every bit of this mental health, drug, and alcohol services differently.
When you say there are gaps, where are the gaps?
Well, perhaps in our area, we had a lack of treatment facilities for the opioid crisis. So we had to implement more intensive outpatient programming on the fly so that people had access to care and service. You know, we looked at the governor's proposal for the naloxone as a temporary measure because a lot of those folks were being turned away. There was no treatment beds available. So that carried us over, and that funding of Narcan, naloxone, kept people alive until we can get them into service. And it sounds harsh, and people don't want to talk about that, but those are the types of decisions that we make on our local level. How will we sustain this? And then we started working towards opening up additional beds.
The good news is that there seems to be more attention on the issue of mental health. Just recently, Governor Wolf unveiled an initiative to tackle mental health issues in a variety of ways. Lisa Schaefer, what does that mean for counties?
So for counties, that means it's great that there's additional focus coming on to this issue that's so important. We're seeing it across the country right now. And a number of the things the governor has proposed in terms of trying to streamline provision of services and things like that will be really helpful. But we really can't get past the simple fact that we're also going to need additional resources to provide those services, to do things like helping to cut wait times down, to put more providers in the field, to make sure that people don't have to travel too far to get services, because we know that those are all things that might be disincentives to them to go and keep their appointments if it's not convenient to them. So they're all great things, great attention, great things going on, but it all can't happen without that increased funding level.
How much of an increase? I mean, the governor, when he proposed his budget for the next fiscal year earlier this week, there is an increase in there for, no? No mental health? I thought there was an increase for mental health services.
So our understanding is that while the number itself increases, that some of that will go to backfill the loss of some federal dollars and some other items like that. So it's not that the pure numbers don't necessarily tell the story.
How much money overall are Pennsylvania's counties getting from the state for mental health services?
So that line item is several hundred million dollars, but the community baseline goes toward county services, but also has some other branches to it. So I don't have an exact number for you of the exact split in that line.
But when you go to the legislature, mm-hmm. and you're asking for more money, how much more are you asking for?
So what we're asking for this year is to kind of rebuild the safety net, just to at least make sure that we're making sure everybody's getting service, is around $42 million. But we also need a commitment to keep building that going forward so that we can expand programs and expand services from that safety net point moving forward.
You know, when many people hear, taxpayers hear, expand, they think, okay, well, we've gotten by to this point. Why isn't expansion needed? But I would think most reasonable people would understand that this is not a normal situation.
Well, and these are services, again, that we could do more, for instance, in our schools, in our communities, with our family supports, building the programs that maybe families need who come into the doors through our children and youth agencies and need some assistance to make sure that they're getting programs and services that can help them build fully functional families that are better for the parents, the children, and our communities.
So $42 million, that's a lot of money. Have you approached legislators with that number?
We have been having conversations with the legislature and the governor's office.
And?
I think everybody, again, agrees the issue is important. I think as we work through this budget process, obviously everybody's concerned with the bottom line. But this is clearly an area where investment needs to happen. It's an area where, as Commissioner Miller mentioned, counties took a significant cut probably 6, 7, 8 years ago now that's never been rebuilt. So we're really operating on resources from 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago. And everything that we're trying to do to make sure that our community still gets those services, because that's absolutely critical that people get those services, we're backfilling with property tax dollars. So it's coming from somewhere.
Commissioner Boozle, were you going to say something?
If I may, I worked in the mental health, drug and alcohol, homeless arena for nearly 20 years before becoming a commissioner. What I would like to say is that the services have shifted dramatically. The counties have had to make some significant changes on their own. So, and I'll give you an example. About 17, 18 years ago, there was a push to move people out of state hospitals, Torrance State Hospital, Mayhew, those types. And then they reinvested back in our community in Butler. And it was a significant increase that we received, but it was a short term. So what that did was it brought people back to their local community, which everyone would think would be a good thing, and it was. But we had to build additional support structures. We built a LTSR, Lock Treatment Facility, locally in Butler, which basically was a short-term stay. It wasn't a long-term stay like a state hospital would be. But without that service being provided, we would have had to put people back in the state hospitals. So it was a stop measure that helped us. Now what's happening is those reinvestment dollars have been whittled away at. So the services being provided to the folks that have left state hospitals have decreased. Whether they're not given as many hours with their case manager or maybe difficulty getting medicines or whatever may happen. And if you've read anything in the news lately, we're looking at mental health in our jails, which became our new treatment facility. Now, in Butler, I'm blessed because we did build our lock treatment facility that's kept people from going to jail. We have a very low, but that doesn't mean every county did that.
Yeah,
so every county is different.
Yeah, you anticipated my next question. Just a few weeks ago, we had Pennsylvania Secretary of Corrections John Wetzel on the program, and he estimated that a third of the inmates in state prisons are suffering from a mental illness. What would your estimate be in Butler County?
At a current rate, we did look at this. We are instituting something called the Stepping Up Program. We also have a mental health court specifically for people with mental illness that are provided services and case management in from the courtroom on out. So we are structured in a way that we're working very diligently not to allow that happen. So if you're asking me for a percentage, I'm going to tell you it's extremely low in Butler. We don't have a waiting list for state hospitals, but that's not the case in every county. What I find in most counties is that is definitely not the case. I would say we have less than 20% of the people in our current jail system that have any form of mental health, but there's different levels too. They have 1, 2, 3, 4 seriously mentally ill. There's a difference between schizophrenia and depression. Not that either one is difficult, but one's more difficult to manage in a jail setting.
Well, 20% is still a fairly high percentage. Commissioner Miller, what about Bradford County?
Again, it's a percentage. I can't give you an exact percent, but I can tell you it's a lot higher than 20% in our rural county because of accessibility to mental health beds and the fact that a lot of times people are, you know, being treated in the communities, and then for whatever reason they end up in our correctional facility, and of course it's a snowballing, cascading series of events that they end up in the system, in our jails. And then to try to get them back out into a treatment facility is very, very difficult.
Is it accurate to say that your county jails are treating people for mental illness where they should be in a treatment facility?
Absolutely. No question about it.
Commissioner Boozle, same thing?
Yes, but maybe not quite as often. I think that we put the structure in place to keep that from happening as much as possible, but that's a shift from years past.
So, Lisa Schaefer, what is the Behavioral Health Choices Program? I understand it's something that counties see as being in jeopardy.
Behavioral Health Choices Program is a way to manage the individuals who are enrolled in Medicaid for behavioral health services. That's your mental health and your drug and alcohol services. And it's been a successful program for 20 years. Counties were given the right of first refusal to manage that program, to bring those services in-house and then try to work with the managed care organizations to get services out to that Medicaid population. So counties really had the ability to work locally with their providers to make those services happen as efficiently as possible and make sure folks got services. And then any dollars that they were able to save as a result of doing it, they could reinvest back in the program. Those reinvestment dollars have been hugely important to making sure that we're keeping those services going on the ground. Over the last several years, we've seen some initiatives from the state, from the legislature, to take that Behavioral Health Choices program and take it out of the county hands and bring it back to state hands instead. We think that would be a mistake. It's, like I said, it's been successful for the last 20 years. We've been managing it very well. And we think that moving it back to a state-level manage and taking it away from that local control would disrupt care for tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands.
Why would the state want to take it back?
I think they're looking at whether they might be able to, by doing some scale, save any costs from doing so. Again, because of the local control, I think we're doing a very good job of working those cost efficiencies locally instead.
We have an email here from Laura who says, as a county employee in Pennsylvania, I have a hard time believing that no one gets turned away from the mental health system in Butler County. How's that possible? Shouldn't other counties model their mental health systems after Butler County if everyone is getting served there? Commissioner Boozle, I don't know whether it sounds, it seems like that you've been very proactive with this, but what about that?
That's a great question, and I can tell you that everyone that does not have insurance comes through our behavioral health services through our base service unit and gets evaluated. We have a very unique structure in Butler County. We have some people that are very well off, and we have some people that are very not well off. And so when you have individual health care, it's oftentimes covered. It's the folks that don't have that. So we have I hate to say this, we have a pretty good mix in Butler County. So that helps. That's one. The second thing is I would say that our providers have really primarily been contracted. We don't have a lot of in-house service at the county level. There's an extreme cost to doing that. I mean, you have union wages and so on that drive that cost up. 90% or better of the services being provided in Butler are contracted services. And that may be different across every county. Again, that's how we do it. That doesn't mean that's how everyone does it.
Lisa, are there counties where people are being turned away?
I would venture to say no, because, again, one, we certainly want to serve every person. That is our most important thing to handle. But we're also mandated to do that. We're mandated to make sure that everybody who comes through our doors is getting services. As I said before, I think the real challenge is making sure they have convenient service that they're actually going to take advantage of. So, if they have to wait too long for a service, is that helping them to improve their condition? If they have to travel too far to find a provider who can help them with their condition, are they going to go? Are they going to keep those appointments on a regular basis? That kind of thing. And that's, I think, where the system starts to break down.
So, in summary, $42 million is what you're looking for.
For this fiscal year, again, with some commitment to increases going forward.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Coming up on Monday's program, you may have heard Maryland is contemplating suing Pennsylvania for not meeting Chesapeake Bay cleanup goals. We'll be talking about that and hear from Pennsylvania Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection along with the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. That's coming up on Monday's program. You can visit our website to get an outlook for conversations we're working on, plus leave a voicemail or voice memo question for one of our upcoming programs. More information is at WITF.org/smarttalk. Our guest on today's program, Lisa Schaefer, Executive Director of the County Commissioner Association, Bradford County Commissioner and CCAP Second Vice President Daryl Miller, Butler County Commissioner and CCAP First Vice President Kevin Boozle. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are @smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. On your list of priorities, coming in at number two, but I get the sense that this probably could be number one on the list as well. You describe this as a crisis in emergency medical services. What is happening or not happening that rises to the level of crisis, Lisa?
what you're seeing across the state right now is the emergency medical services field is really built on a lot of volunteers, and we're seeing a lot of those volunteer numbers just dwindle. So we're having trouble and dealing with some of the funding sources and what's available to make sure that those services are being adequately provided out to our communities. Is there someone, when you call our 911 system, that we're going to be able to dispatch who can get to you in an appropriate amount of time to treat the condition, you know, the situation that you're having? And the truth of the matter is, the answer more and more is no. And so we're really seeing a critical public health crisis that we need to deal with. Even though it's a municipal service, counties are looking at ways, you know, how can we help to bring partners together, and how can we help to create local solutions?
What kind of local solutions?
So we know that there are already some folks who are bringing their emergency services providers together on a regional basis to see where they can maybe share administrative services that might help to bring their recruitment services together so that they can have a better focus on that, for instance. We know that there are some areas where they are working closely with their local hospitals and other providers to see what kind of solutions they can provide. And then there's also a lot of work going on in the legislature to look at some of the things like the funding structures and some of the ways that the system is structured to see what we can do there.
The things you just listed sound like administrative changes. The bottom line for many people in your counties is, okay, if you're talking about a countywide emergency service, does this mean that an ambulance or a fire company would get to my home? It would take them a longer amount of time to do that.
I don't think what we're looking at is for the counties to take over the system. Sure, you might be able to put a countywide structure in place.
Okay,
of some
and that's
sort,
what I just wanted to make clarify.
But that doesn't necessarily undermine the municipal and the local structure that we have in place. It just might help us to see ways where we could pull those efficiencies together and help to make sure the system is able to cover everyone in the entire county.
Commissioner Miller, this is a huge problem. I mean, demographics have a lot to do with it, because a lot of younger people, a lot of the people who are volunteers are getting up there in age, and they're not being replaced by younger people. So demographics have something to do with it. And let's face it, there are a lot of other activities for younger people to do, but there are some other factors involved too: training, money, all those kind of things. Talk about it in a rural county.
Oh, in a rural county, it is. The demographics are changing. I'm a former EMT myself from decades ago. And things are changing in communities. At one time, when I was a young person and involved in the local fire department and emergency first responder community, most of the people in the community lived and worked in the community. You know, the people that were involved in their fire services and their ambulance services lived, worked, and did everything right in the community. Now people work outside the community for the most part. They don't work right in the community, so it makes it hard to respond to emergencies when, in rural counties like ours, predominantly most of your first responder community are all volunteers. We have a couple of paid. I think we have three paid ambulance services in the county. And one fire department, I believe, has one paid person to drive one of the larger trucks. But it's predominantly volunteers. And interestingly enough, while we were waiting for this radio show, we had I get alerts on my phone when there's an emergency and there was a car accident. They had to call four different departments to get enough equipment.
Is that typical?
Mm-hmm. Very typical. Very typical.
That would seem to say people's lives are in danger.
It is a crisis. When it's referred to as a crisis, it truly is a crisis.
Why are you a former EMT?
Just time. I just...
I don't know. If the county commissioner gets out there, it may set example. I'm joking with you, of course. But no, I mean, this is a crisis across the state. Same in Butler County, Commissioner?
Well, funny enough, I am still currently an EMT and a firefighter.
Now there's all kinds of pressure.
I know. I got to get recertified.
But yes, it is the same. And this is one of the reasons why I went to the board and we made it a task force to look at. Because 2004, when they had an SR-60 report, in 2018, they had another one, SR-6, pretty much said the same thing, but nothing changed. There was no action taken. So when you look at this, it's truly not a county's role. Legislatively, the emergency services are not. Now, the 911 systems and so on are, but not the actual EMS and fire. So when I was looking at this from a fire point of view originally coming in, and I learned what the peril of the EMS system was across the state, we realized this is a very big elephant to chew at, and we needed to focus in, and they chose to do EMS as a task force first. And they do overlap. EMS and fire oftentimes are housed in the same buildings, same volunteers, the same people. You hit it on the head when you said training's expensive. The training requirements have grown for both domains, both for fire and EMS. And you have less people. You have people pulled off trucks by a local company like Sheets that says, you know, here we're paying $13 an hour to work at the gas pump and turn on pump six when you're making $10 or $11 with blood, guts, and gore. So it's a struggle out there for real, and we're looking at what we could do. We took those reports and said, as a county, what can we impact? And municipalities that are ultimately responsible, they don't have legislative bodies out in Harrisburg talking to these folks. I do give credit to the legislators now. They picked up the iron and started running with us. They've reached back to us and are engaged. So those are all positives.
So, you know, I'll ask that question again to kind of end this part of the conversation. What's the solution? I mean, Lisa, you talked about looking at some partnerships and what you can do on a countywide level, but what are the solutions?
So there's a lot of recommendations in the task force report that Commissioner Boozle just mentioned, and our board has authorized that task force for another year so we can start taking those recommendations and looking at implementation. I'd say two of the biggest ones that we're targeting right now are looking at some legislation that might allow us to do some different service models in terms of a countywide authority across the state that would give that authorization. But the other one is also to help create a sort of a toolbox that we're starting to hear that there are different activities going on locally around the state. How can we bring those together into a set of best practices, a toolbox for other counties that might, who should you have at the table? What data do you need? What questions should you be asking? What do you need to help drive a solution locally among your EMS services?
I want to turn to another one of your legislative priorities, and that is county property tax reform. You know, when people hear property tax reform in Pennsylvania, they automatically think of school districts. And let's face it, that's because the school property tax is one of the biggest bills that many homeowners will face, many property owners will face. On the county level, property tax is really one of the only ways that you can generate revenue, correct?
But the property tax is the only source of general fund revenue that we have.
Only general fund, okay. Mm-hmm. So what are you looking for?
So what we'd like is to be part of that conversation, as we talked about before, partnerships and conversation with the legislature, because only having that source, you know, it's kind of that all your eggs in one basket theory. We'd like to be able to diversify our tax base so that we don't have to rely just on that. We know that there are issues and problems with it, and there might be other options that counties could use instead to such as an optional income tax, an optional sales tax, that would give them be able to spread their tax base a little bit better and better meet the differences in their demographics, their economics, what's going on locally to better support their local counties.
You know, though, Commissioner Miller, when people hear diversifying that, they think tax increase. That's code words for tax increase, is it?
Well, no. We're not talking about a tax increase. We're talking about a way to share the tax burden, because property taxes, especially in our county, disproportionately affect our aging population, our senior communities. And, you know, it's hard for them on fixed incomes to continue to, you know, stay in their homes, continue with school property taxes increasing. You know, the county, thankfully, we have not raised taxes in over a dozen years and plan to continue that way. But it's the only source of revenue that a county has when they're being asked to step up and provide services and mandated things that we're told we have to do. One, and you may talk about a little bit later, is the elections, when, you know, we're told that we have to buy new elections equipment. Well, for Bradford County, that's a $1.3 million expense. Thankfully, we were able to cover that. But again, those are things that, you know, county to county, if we were just given the opportunity to be able to look at what would be in the best interest of our constituents and our citizens in our county to best serve them, you know, with, you know, a toolbox of different sources of revenue.
Commissioner Boozle, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, that when you hear property tax reform, you like never hear county tax reform. It's always directed towards school property taxes.
Right.
On the county level, that has to be frustrating.
It is, and that's why CCAP has really struck a chord and said we need to be at the table too. Yes, about 70% of your taxes go to the school, but 10% goes to your local municipality and 20% goes to your county, roughly, I mean, cutting it out. But it absolutely impacts us. What works for my county may not work for another county. If we do this structure, I can be honest with you, it could be a slippery slope if you went in it the wrong way. Look, county property tax, one thing about it is it's very stable. It doesn't go up and down with economics. But it does create burden. So where do you draw the line on what you want to do for your county? If it's developed on a tax on a product or export or however it's done, sales tax, however it is put in there, it's reliant upon economics. Well, we know when economics go down, all of our services are in higher demand. So how do you base it on that? It may work part, but it's not going to be 100%. It cannot be 100% giving up property tax. I really wish that people would stop talking about that because it's an unrealistic goal. There's movement. There's absolutely ways we could do it differently. But 100% reduction of property tax doesn't seem very feasible in our world.
Well, you only have about 5 minutes left, and I want to touch on the last issue that you have as part of your priorities, and that is adult probation funding. Lisa Schaefer, what's the issue here?
So almost all of our counties actually provide adult probation services, so that's community supervision options for nonviolent offenders. The state supports funding for that through a grant and aid that offsets our cost to train personnel and to provide program services. Unfortunately, like so many of the other things we've talked about, that state funding has been flat funded for probably at least 8-9 years.
The word you've used is stagnant.
Correct.
And there was a cut before that.
Correct. There was a cut prior to that. Now, the Justice Reinvestment Phase 2 legislation that was adopted back at the end of 2019 will help us by being able to redistribute some of those savings that we achieved from that legislation back into the system. So that will certainly help, and we're very grateful to the legislature and the governor for making that happen. But there's still training needs and other program needs those baseline fundings that come into helping support those services at the county level are truly needed.
I wish we had more time because there's so many different issues, but I do want to touch on voting, and Commissioner Miller mentioned this. 2020 presidential election year, Pennsylvania's counties were mandated by the state to and feds to upgrade, modernize, make sure that voting equipment met certain standards. Where do you stand right now with that?
Sure. So the Stein settlement agreement that the state entered into required all of our counties to replace their machines with voter-verified paper ballot machines. All of our counties have met the deadline to purchase those by the end of 2019. We still have probably about 22 or so, about a third of our counties, that will be deploying for the first time at the presidential primary here in April. Act 77 last year did authorize the state to ask PEDFA to issue a bond for $90 million that will reimburse our counties for 60% of the cost, which we are extremely grateful for. That process is in progress right now, and we're working toward that. But we're also now looking at all of the election reforms that were also in Act 77, so different deadlines for voter registration, for getting absentee ballots, new mail-in ballot requirements.
We'll be talking about that next Wednesday on Smart Talk.
So all of those things are kind of combining a lot of things that we're trying to get our hands around to try and make sure that we are absolutely prepared so that every single person has the right to a fair vote and access to that vote on Election Day.
And Iowa caucuses this week remind people and maybe make them feel a little less confident sometimes. We only have a minute or so left. I wanted to get this email in. We'll try to get a couple emails in. I have a question regarding the broadband expansion. I agree, a technologically advanced society, internet is becoming more and more essential in all communities. However, my question is, have commissioners assessed Pennsylvania's rural counties and spoken to their residents? Do these residents view internet as a priority? Commissioner Miller?
Absolutely. It's one of the things we are inundated with calls and requests, and every time we're out in the public, people are, you know, where are you at with this project? Because, you know, accessibility, it's akin to, you know, like water and sewer. I mean, it's almost a you know, public service, basically, in a way, to have accessibility to, you know, intercommunicate.
Real quick, I wish I had more time to ask you this question, but Governor Wolf has proposed a tax, a severance tax on natural gas drillers to upgrade infrastructure, including broadband. You're in a county where natural gas drilling is big. Where do you stand on that?
I am against the expansion, adding a severance tax.
Why?
Because there's already taxes imposed.
You're talking about the impact fee.
Well, the impact fee, plus they're exposed to every other tax that any other company doing business in the Commonwealth
is. Even though some of that money would go toward broadband expansion.
Yeah, I'm still not in favor of it.
I want to thank our guests for being with us today. Lisa Schaefer from the County Commissioner Association, Bradford County Commissioner Daryl Miller, Butler County Commissioner Kevin Boozle. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up on Monday's program, we're going to be talking about the Chesapeake Bay and Pennsylvania not meeting its goals. That's coming up on Monday's show.